read and hear more about important news, events, and public policy debates at ncnewsline.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome to News and Views. I'm your host, Rob Schofield. The United States Supreme Court heard its first major abortion case this past week since it issued the 2022 Dobbs decision overturning Roe v. Wade. At issue this time is mifepristone, a safe and effective medication that was approved by the Food and Drug Administration a quarter century ago and that today is used in a large majority of the nation's abortions. The arguments in the case drew advocates and elected officials from across the country to Washington, including Wake County State Representative Julie Von Hafen. Von Hafen, who was a signatory to a friend of the court brief in the case and had a chance to address a group of pro-choice advocates, returned to North Carolina the following day and was kind enough to sit down with me for a chat to discuss both the abortion pill case as well as some of the other issues likely to be discussed in Raleigh next month as the legislature's 2024 short session gets underway. Well, Representative Julie Von Hafen, welcome back to News and Views. Good to have you back with us.
Thank you.
The General Assembly finally getting ready to come back in just a few weeks, but maybe before we get to that, let's talk about you actually traveled to the U.S. Supreme Court to speak outside the court as justices determine the fate of medication abortion. Talk about that event. Talk about some of the emotions surrounding the day as this really momentous ruling is considered in Washington right now.
Yeah, I mean, this case is the first major case around abortion that's being considered by the Supreme Court since Dobbs. So it's very consequential, especially because medication abortion is now, you know, the most popular form of abortion. I think it's around 63% nationwide. And we knew after Dobbs that medication abortion would probably rise in popularity because, you know, of just the patchwork of laws and restrictions that we're now seeing across the country. And so it was really important for me to go, one, because I'm one of the two named parties in an amicus brief, which is a friend of the court brief that was filed on behalf of over 600 state legislators from across the country, basically, you know, saying that we're standing with one voice to say that we don't want the court to interfere with restrictions or, you know, laws around medication abortion. I mean, it's kind of ironic in the fact that Dobbs basically put decisions around abortion squarely in the hands of the state, and this case is kind of doing the opposite and making kind of a nationwide law about access. So I work a lot with a group called the State Innovation Exchange, and they have a group called the Reproductive Freedom Leadership Council, and they're the ones that kind of helped me connect with the rally organizers yesterday, and I was able to be one of the speakers during the rally. It was a really exciting day, but I, you know, it's always mixed emotions because, of course, I would rather not be there right, rallying and, you know, protesting on these issues. But for me, it's always really energizing to be around people who have like views and that we're all fighting for the same things. This work can be very frustrating and draining. And so I think for everyone, you know, advocates and elected officials alike, these types of events are really important. And so I was really happy to be there.
Yeah, the facts of the case are pretty remarkable, actually, because the medication that is at issue, mifepristone, has been approved for decades by the FDA. It's had a remarkably safe record, probably much safer than a lot of other pharmaceuticals. And yet the challenge is based on a premise that this is somehow a danger to women to be using this medication and that the FDA process for approving it was somehow flawed. It really not only raises the whole question of access to basic abortion care, but could really jeopardize the entire approval process for pharmaceuticals if the Supreme Court were somehow to go along with the plaintiffs. It seems like even the Republican-dominated Supreme Court was a little skeptical of the arguments that had been brought forth before it.
I mean, I think the one big thing is that, you know, the whole idea of standing, whether the doctors who sued the FDA in this case were even damaged, you know, by what they claim was going on. And I think that that was kind of their main skepticism. But I do agree that what's really scary about this case is it could affect, you know, FDA approvals for any medication, not just this medication. And so I think anyone should be very concerned about that.
So as we approach the short session here in North Carolina, going to be commencing in just under a month, you know, we just had the 12-week abortion ban enacted in North Carolina. Senate Leader Phil Berger said he's not in favor of any, quote, wholesale changes to this new restriction. But I wonder if you have any concerns that there still could be new attempts to further limit women's access to reproductive health care.
I'm always concerned, for sure. I mean, I think that especially the Republican majority being in the supermajority this year, you know, they always have the ability to kind of do whatever they would like to do. I get this question a lot, both from voters and from press. And I guess I would say I'm always of two minds, because I think that on one hand, you know, I think they have to weigh, you know, that they do have the supermajority. And if they do want to do something, this would be the year to do it, because obviously we're very focused on breaking that supermajority this year. And so going into the next session, they might not have the ability to do that, especially if we can hold the governor's office with a pro-reproductive rights candidate and then, you know, break that supermajority. But then on the other hand, I would say that I think that they're realizing that what they did with SB 20 wasn't very popular with the voters. And so hopefully they'll look at kind of the effects of what happened last year and realize that, you know, we shouldn't go any further before the next election.
And of course, as we're speaking of reproductive health care, in light of the recent decision of the Alabama State Supreme Court, which purported to ban in vitro fertilization on this fairly remarkable reading that a smattering of cells constitutes a child with constitutional rights. Even conservative Republicans have spoken out about the need to protect in vitro fertilization. Do you think there's any possibility that we could see legislation along those lines, actually to protect this basic access to parenthood, really, in North Carolina?
I don't see that the current leadership of the House or the Senate really has much interest in protecting, honestly, any reproductive health care in our state. So I don't really see that happening. And I think that, you know, what we've seen across the country is that Republicans will say that they want to protect IVF, but they haven't really seen a lot of actions to do right. So, especially, you know, even in Congress. So I don't really anticipate us taking that up this year, but of course.
You'd favor it, I trust.
Absolutely. I mean, we, you know, who knows, we're talking right now about, you know, what types of bills and different things we're going to be filing this short session. So, you know, we'll see if we even just go ahead and file something proactively around that topic.
We're talking with Representative Julie Von Hafen, who's served three terms in the North Carolina House representing Wake County District 36. A lot of other important issues out there these days. Just this week, we also had President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris stop in Raleigh to talk about the success of the Affordable Care Act. It's really sort of easy to forget how critically important that law has been. Now we're celebrating its 14th anniversary and finally fully realized in North Carolina. It's been an amazingly successful law.
It's so exciting to, you know, have the president and the vice president here. I mean, unfortunately, I was in Washington, D.C. yesterday, so I wasn't able to attend. But, you know, just the fact that North Carolina is now being looked at by other states who have an expanded Medicaid. And I was at a recent meeting with some Georgia legislators who were telling me that they're now, you know, using us as an example for, you know, a red state that was able to successfully expand Medicaid. And that's great to hear, you know, but I know it took a very, very long time and a lot of effort by a lot of people. But it's great to see the president, you know, kind of upholding North Carolina as a state that's really been able to use the ACA and to help so many of our citizens. And it's been exciting to see how many people have enrolled. You know, I do a lot of work around childcare, and I was just at a childcare center in my district last week, and I was talking to the director about, you know, healthcare coverage for her own workers. And we had a long conversation about how Medicaid is going to really help a lot of her own employees. So just to see it in my own district, it's just really exciting.
Let's talk about childcare. That's an issue I know you're a longtime champion of. You just alluded to that fact. There is a cliff looming out there, however, with federal funding ending in June and big amounts of money that have been coming from the federal government being shut off. Childcare centers are struggling already to pay employees a decent wage and stay in business. We've already seen a lot of them close. I wonder if you have thoughts about this issue and what the General Assembly needs to do in the coming months to avoid a real disaster in the childcare world.
I'm very hopeful that in the short session, we will put some more money into childcare, whether it's the large amount that we honestly really need, I don't know. But, you know, we have had some really great bipartisan support on this issue. It's just getting the majority of the bipartisan support. I think we have champions on both sides of the aisle, and I know that the Republican champions, especially, say, for example, Senator Jim Bergen, who, you know, just got an award from the Child Care Association that I was at their breakfast. He always is very supportive because I think he understands how important it is for his economy. Like, he lives in a rural area and just for the economy of North Carolina, but it's just, and I know he's been working hard to try to get more support in his caucus. And I think it's just going to, unfortunately, it's going to just take time, I think, for people to understand how important this issue is. But I'm hopeful that in the short session, hopefully we can make some budget adjustments because, you know, that's what we're there for in the next couple of months and to see some more support because, like you said, so many centers are really struggling right now. And it's not good for our families, for sure.
Or our economy, I suppose.
Yeah.
Let's pivot and briefly and talk about K through 12 education. You were a longtime leader in the PTA before joining the legislature. Wake County recently passed a resolution to regularly and consistently provide families with information and resources about the importance of secure gun storage. I wonder, I know this is an issue you care a lot about, and it seems like a no-brainer, but still in many ways an uphill battle just to get this basic information out there. Talk to us about that issue.
Yeah, I mean, I was so excited to see that they're taking up this issue. And honestly, elections matter because there are people on our Wake County School Board who have been longtime advocates and champions for gun safety, including Lynn Edmonds, who was a longtime Moms Demand leader in North Carolina. And so, you know, it's just elections matter because people are there now that this issue really is important to them and they pushed it and that advocates helped them, you know, get the information. And it's really exciting to see. And I've been working with some other advocate groups across the state, including one in Charlotte. And this is going to be one of their main pushes this year is to get more school boards to do exactly what Wake County did to at least, you know, if they can't get action on the state level to get these local school districts to at least, you know, push this information out to their parents. It makes a huge difference. I will say that, you know, I also recently met with Gerald Tate, who's the new director of our Office of Violence Prevention within the Department of Public Safety, because I wanted to hear directly from him about what they're doing in this new office, which Governor Cooper established. And when I went to the White House a few months ago for their convening on gun violence prevention, because now they have this federal office, you know, one of their big pushes is to get every state to have an office just like Governor Cooper established. And so Mr. Tate was telling me that, you know, the one big thing that they want to see in the short session is funding for the NC Safe program, which is our gun safety and gun locks, gun safety, gun information program, which was put into our pistol permit bill, you know, where they repealed the pistol permitting process, but they gave no funding for it. So, well, one thing in the short session is that they're going to be asking, I think, for about $2.5 million to fund the NC Safe program and also to make the Office of Violence Prevention a permanent office, because right now it's an executive ordered office. And so we want to make sure that that stays, you know, as a permanent fixture in our state government. There's a lot of lip service, I guess, around safe storage, but we have to put money behind it if we want to make sure that it's robust and it covers everyone in the state.
Yeah, the numbers remain still rather shocking. How many homes in North Carolina have unsecured firearms? Regardless of what your position is on gun regulation, the idea that everybody should safely store the ones they have seems like it ought to be non-controversial.
Almost every week in the news, there's a story about a child getting shot, you know, by an unsecured weapon. And so it's just, it's something that we should be able to at least put some money behind so we can inform parents and guardians about how important it is to safely secure their weapons.
We're coming to the end of our time with State Representative Julie Von Hafen of Wake County. But while we're on the topic of education, I want to ask you one last question. It has to do with this ongoing expansion of the Opportunity Scholarship School Voucher Program. We've had tens of thousands of new applications. The General Assembly said that the superintendent should come up with a common national standard to assess how successful these voucher schools are and whether they're actually teaching our kids anything, because we know now that voucher schools run the gamut from very tiny little unregulated facilities to big schools. But now it looks like Superintendent Truitt has asked for an extension to next year. I take it, do you share the concern that these scholarships are being paid out, but we really don't have any idea how their students are performing in the schools where they're receiving these vouchers?
Yeah, I mean that's been a long time issue ever since the Opportunity Scholarship Program started, and something that pro public education advocates have pushed for years. You know, the fact that it was in the expansion, you know, is a great step, but it's kind of ironic that now the superintendent wants to push it off till she's not in office anymore. So I don't know, you know, what that's all about. But, you know, I have to actually talk to some teachers about this. And, you know, the one concern that they have is, say a private school picks a different type of test than they offer
Right.
in the public schools. So that, does that mean that now the public schools have to test in the same method so that we do have parity between the two testing methods? Is this just going to add another test onto our already over-tested public school students? That's what concerns me. You know, it's great that they want to somehow get some data, but it has to be accurate data that's actually going to show a great comparison between the two entities. And I think that's what we just have to look out for.
State Representative Julie Von Hafen, one of the most articulate voices in the North Carolina General Assembly on education, gun safety, reproductive freedom, so many issues. We really appreciate your all your fine work and for taking the time to be with us today. I know it's a busy session that's coming up in just a couple of weeks, so rest up and good luck in championing the causes that will be at the top of your agenda.
Thank you so much. Great to be with you again.
Coming up next, a special two-part conversation about artificial intelligence and its role in American politics. Don't go away.